Yeah. Now we're getting right proper signals. Although I was a little concerned last time we were down a bit.
Fuck off. Oh, you mean volume-wise? Mm-hmm. You know what happens when you when it's down a little bit, that you see that it's down? You put it up a little bit. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Sounds from the 70s with Gary and Rob, sometimes known as Johnny Idiot Stick.
Johnny! Idiot Stick.
Coming to you from a shack in the middle of nowhere, in the dead of winter, just to make you people happy. That's where we have to go. We have to drive out all the way in the middle of nowhere, in the dead of winter, in this cold shack, just so we can present this show to our loyal audience.
I think hunters use this place for butchering carcasses.
Welcome, everyone. we have a show so good it will be banned when it's aired in 12 states. We already know that. They already told us. And it is, you know what? It's that damn good. I was looking over the script today, and I said, this show is damn good tonight.
We should have clipped this one and saved it for a better time.
We should have saved this for 3 years from now.
Yeah, when it's not 50 years from the release of the album.
So that it totally screws up everybody's head. That's what we should have called this show. We should have called this Screwing Up Your Head.
Yeah, and we didn't, because we had no foresight.
No, we didn't.
We need foresight.
We had to have foresight.
If anyone knows, we can get some foresight. Send some in.
Speaking of 50 years, on today's episode, we will be continuing our look into, don't blow your nose, our look into albums released 50 years ago this year, in the year of our Lord, 1973.
Good year.
No, a Goodyear had nothing to do with it. Stop with your... Rob's got his sponsorship with Goodyear Tires, and he always tries to put that in. I said the word year. I did. I said the word year three times in that last sentence, if you were paying attention. Do you want me to do it again? For all you people that weren't paying attention, we will be continuing our look into albums released 50 years ago this year, in the year of our Lord, 1973. Oh, I only count.
No, there was three. You missed one.
Oh, yeah, released 50 years ago this year in the year of our Lord. Yeah, there was three of them.
There's three?
Yeah, yeah. Today's spotlight is on the band Little Feat and their album Dixie Chicken, which was actually first going to be called Dixie Salmon. Until smarter heads prevailed. This is a true, but not true fact. Did you know that?
I both know it and believe it.
Now, Rob, somebody told me, I can't remember who, I think it was somebody, and that you have a rather interesting story that happened to you last week that I think our listeners would like to hear, because I need to get myself a drink of water. So I'm interested to hear what was so interesting about what happened last week.
Last week.
And take your time.
By golly, the only thing that really happened there is I spilled some coffee on the carpet there. And that wouldn't have been too much of a thing by itself, but somebody noticed and pointed it out and said, you got to clean this up. And I'm like, it's kind of not really my fault. I tripped on something.
Odds and ends. Lost time is not found again. We have a rather interesting odds and ends today, Rob. It's interesting.
Really interesting?
No, of course not. But it is interesting.
Interesting.
As I would like to ask for the help. I'm asking for help here. First of all, I need a new sidekick.
Not for
but
me.
Now, well, we're not talking about that today.
You're not helping me, asking me for help, are you?
No, oh my God, no.
Okay.
I would like to ask for the help of any of our listeners out there who might know something about music that I don't know, which is very rare indeed, to find somebody who knows something about music that I don't know. But I am completely stumped about this. Going back into my memory, there was a show in the early to mid 80s. It was a concert type show that aired on independent stations. It wasn't on the big three networks or anything like that. and I can't find any information on the name of the show or anything. Now, the show was, I think, an hour long, and it would have one or two bands on the show performing. They'd be performing hip music for the people, which
wasn't done at the time.
Which was not the trend back then, to be performing hip music for the people. And they had this kind of same stage, and the band would kind of perform, you know, their set, as the musicians say, their set. And then sometimes they would have another band on there, and they would perform their set, and they'd kind of edit it into 1 hour show of two sets. Sometimes it would be a whole band, sometimes playing the whole hour. Yeah. Now, I said that too excitingly.
This sounds like a show I've seen or would want to see.
I can't believe that nobody, when I mention this, remembers this. Because I remember it quite vividly. I know it had In Excess on a couple of times before they became famous in North America. I remember it because I did not know this band. And they had released, I think, two albums, but they'd made no dent in North America. But and they had a brand I didn't like. I remember they were on this show a couple times. Maybe this is a show out of Australia. I don't know. But they were on a couple of times. I didn't like them. And I had a friend. Okay, I'm gonna divert a little bit because I want to say this. I had a friend, and I was really young. I was like 18. I had a friend who I worked with in my dad's company, his bingo company, and he loved In Excess. He was a big In Excess fan. And this kind of, what day were you doing?
Look at my water.
Oh, and you know, when we do a show on the internet,
I'll have to wear pants.
You're gonna have to act more couth, okay? Is what I'm saying. Anyways, he loved In Excess, and I didn't like them at the beginning. I don't know if I liked them later on either. But I liked them for sure a lot better later on than I did at the beginning. And I saw them a couple times on the show, and he was a big In Excess fan. He was actually a guy, and this is before I started my band. This was like maybe a year before I just got out of school, and I was trying to get a band together, but I was mostly taking like at least 6 months to a year off, and then just calling people and just saying, hey, would you want to be in my band? Hey, you want to be in my band?
You want to be in my band? I got something I want to show you.
And he gave me, he was a musician actually, and he gave me some really good tips. The story doesn't end well, unfortunately. He has some problems with his girlfriend and her child, who he thought of as his child. And not to bum everybody out, but unfortunately, I got a call one day from work saying that he had got into his car and that he had asphyxiated himself by just running the car. It was quite devastating. I had never known anybody who had died, really. And then to know somebody who was quite a good friend of mine, even though he's a couple of years older than me, he gave me some valuable information that I really needed when I was trying to form a band, what I needed to do. He told me about, when you're going to record, you got to record the bed tracks. And I said, what are bed tracks? Well, you got to record the songs without vocals and all that, which I didn't really know. I just thought you went in and recorded it. So he gave me some very valuable tips. I still miss him to this day. It's been, God, 35 years, but I still miss him. He was such a good guy, and a guy like that shouldn't die at like 22 or whatever. But every time I think of In Excess, every time I think of him, after all these years, I think of In Excess, because he was a huge fan. And anyways, I just wanted to say that as a tribute to him, because he had a big influence on me. I remember also on the show, the Jay Giles Band being on the show. I remember the Jay Giles Band being, if that strikes any memories in people. Jay Giles Band was on the show, and there was a really good band on the show called The Call, that didn't catch on with the public. They caught on it with the critics. They were a critic's favorite type of band. And on the show, they had Garth Hudson of the band playing keyboards with them. as Garth had just played on their recent album. And The Call were a really good band. They weren't a great band. They weren't like earth-shattering, but they were much better than 80% of the bands that were out there at the time. And Garth also toured with them at that point. If anybody remembers that, I'm giving a lot of freaking clues here, but I have no idea what the name of this show is. I have no idea how many shows were made. I've looked and looked and looked. Now, with these clues, I hope you can help me, because it is seriously bugging me. It really is, that I can't remember a show. And this isn't a show that I saw when I was young in the 70s. This is a show in the early 80s. So I'm it really bugs me that I really can't remember. And I also like to know where it came from. Like, was it an Australian show? If it was an Australian show, you'd think there'd be a lot of, hey, mate. Like that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Hey, mate.
Barbecues and shrimps and dingoes eating their baby. Yeah, yeah.
On stage, a lot of shrimps on the barbie.
I'm a walking, talking stereotype.
I have no qualms saying that, because our Australian listenership is very low.
Yeah.
Which disappoints me about a whole continent. But screw you, Australia. Why can't a couple of you?
They dig on the sounds of the 70s.
No, they don't dig on anything, I don't think. I think they like Minute Work, and after that, it's like, yeah, that rock music doesn't do nothing for me. Yeah. Unless, of course, it's Minute Work. That's what they're like.
Minute Work for good. I like it.
unless it's Minute Work. Then I'm totally hip to what's going on. Other than that, I don't like that rock music. So, also, some good news, though. I finally found, and this was, I don't know how I found this, but I had to do a lot of research for this show. And which means I have to look through a lot of old newspapers for articles and blah, blah, blah. I finally found the name of the show that I had mentioned here on a previous episode a long time ago. And the show was on a local cable television station here, Cable 10. You remember, Rob?
Yeah, they were like the local, anyone could get a show on TV.
Yeah, every city in North America has a cable station that
for local broadcasting
and bullshit.
For people who otherwise wouldn't be allowed to broadcast because they're not
very anywhere. Blind. No, anywhere. Seriously. Yeah, anywhere. That's where they got the idea for Wayne's World, that it was a, you know, public whatever. Fuck off. Anyways. and this show started in late 1977 and 1978. And it had a DJ. I told you about this, Rob. It had a DJ play music in a recording booth, very similar to WKRP in Cincinnati, before there was a WKRP in Cincinnati. WKRP Cincinnati started in September of 1978. This was in late 1977, 78. It was just like that. There would be just a guy like Johnny Fever. And he'd play music for like a half an hour. I thought it was an hour, but when I checked the TV guide about this back then, it was a half an hour show, and he'd like play music, and maybe there'd be a chick next week playing music. Looked like a university thing. I'm not sure.
Probably. I probably know they do that on the radio station there, or the college station, where the people get to have an hour or two of whatever they want to play.
Yeah. And it looked just like the recording. That's not studio, but the recording booth that WKRP would eventually have. It would look very similar to that. And I would watch the show every week, because I was just starting to listen to music, you know, in the middle of 1977. And this show started in like December of 1977. And I watch it every week for half an hour, going like, oh, it's so cool. Like, they would play the music and then like put the lights down low sometimes. In the booth.
For the moon.
And, you know, and then they had the cool posters on the wall. They had, like, songs from The Wood, from Jethro Tull.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and, like, Wings Over America and all that stuff. And it was, to me, it was a very cool show that it seemed nobody watched but me. But I think I found the name of the show. If it's the right show that I'm thinking of, it says in the TV guide It's called What's Happening Mama?
What's Happening Mama? Hey, wait a second.
Wait on. No,
I'm so, going to bet a small amount of money. You haven't got the right to.
The right show.
I have no idea. I'm just guessing here. But
What's Happening Mama?
What's Happening Mama?
Was not a show that you're thinking of. No, it was called...
This was mostly white people, was it? What's Happening Mama?
They were the DJ booth saying after each record, "What's happening, Mama?" I think your memory's skewed up a little bit.
Don't try to jive me.
No, the show was actually called Musical Moods, which makes sense. Musical Moods, and they play different types of pop music, rock music. I was a half hour long. Now, if anybody, you have to almost be in our area to remember this, and we're not going to tell you what area we're in. We're in Canada someplace.
All stations are the same, so every station is like this.
Show called Musical Moods. If anybody has any more information on this show, please email me at soundsfromthe70s@gmail.com. That is soundsfromthe70s. I always do that to get a laugh, and the only laugh I get is from me. soundsfromthe70s@gmail.com. And if you are a woman, of course, please send a picture. Got that out of the way. That was our odds and ends. I have a question. I actually had a question for both. I'm glad I thought I would never find the name of that show, but I think I found it. It's not for certain, but... It's kind of, it was seems like it's on the same day and the same time. It's a long time ago, though, Rob. So I'm thinking that that's the show, Musical Moods.
Gotta be.
And if I can get some more information on that, and I'm still going to be looking myself. They didn't really have a lot of information on cable shows back then.
No, you know? And cable shows didn't really keep records because they knew it was all just the stuff that
bullshit.
Was coming.
Yeah, it was all bullshit, yeah. We're going to keep records of a bullshit show.
It genuinely wasn't worth the videotape.
No, it wasn't. I promise you, the videotapes were erased the minute after they left that DJ booth.
Maybe even sooner. And I think they didn't even bother like taping over them. They just brought them near a big magnet. Let's get rid of this stuff now.
Let's set up for the next show. Okay, now, this is interesting. Now, since we are talking about television shows... In the 1970s. Let's continue with that. Because you know what? Sometimes I feel we have gotten away from talking about the culture of the 70s since we started this show. We've talked a lot about music. We talk about music almost every show. But we have
70s
since...
memories.
Yeah, you know, this would be a 70s memories thing. We can do that. 70s memories.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah. And this is what... So I kind of wanted to talk about this and because I wanted to get back. It's hard to talk about 70s memories because we were so young. And there, a lot of 70s memories... not a lot to do in the 70s. It was a fun time.
Yeah.
But it was a fun time with not a lot of... coverage of it because it was mostly kids partying and stuff like that. You didn't have games to play. You didn't have...
And nobody recorded everything.
Therefore,
memories is all we got.
So for like, if you wanted like shows like I'm talking about, there's no record of it. And if you want to talk about football or hockey games or baseball games, forget it. They're almost non-existent. So it's tough to talk about 70s culture after we got through kind of like the first stage of a whole year, I think, talking about 70s memories. I kind of ran out. There was really nothing. And so we kind of concentrated more on the music of the 70s, which is what the show about. Although that's not what I started this about. But I wanted to talk about this. And I don't know why this came into my mind, but I think it was seeing a little bit of a replay of a show. I want to talk about police or detective shows from this era.
Oh, yeah, I made a list.
No, you didn't make a list. You didn't even know I was going to talk about this.
No, I didn't. I thought about this a while back, and I tried to name all the detective shows in the 70s. I came up with 15, and there were some I missed.
You know what? I came up, I didn't look at it. I went to the IMDb website. I got whole bunch. I got how many did I get? How many, Rob, how many do you think I found?
Okay, if I found 15, I think there were at least 30. 30.
Detective shows. 43.
43!
That are listed here. So
they're impressive.
Okay, now I'm going to tell you right now, as a kid, and maybe even now, I was not a big fan of the 70s detective shows. It was not... the 70s detective shows, first of all, they were almost all an hour.
That was more grown-up stuff.
That was grown-up stuff.
There was a bunch of drama happening.
And there was a bunch of... You're exactly right. And it was... There wasn't a lot of... There was some action, but a lot of it was like, we got to get that guy. I know, but how are we going to do it? And, you know, it had a lot of authority to it. The police were kind of...
they were always right. They were the good guys.
They were always right, and they were the good guys. And yet, we were the generation that was coming up that was kind of like going, I don't know about that. And yet, this is actually a little psychological here, because I believe this is true. I'm going to get a little deep here. But
you're presenting a theory.
The people, yeah, I am, in our 70s memories, which is supposed to be light, and it's still going to be light. But the people who were programming in the 70s still weren't the people that started programming in the 80s and 90s and so forth, which is the rock and roll generation.
Yeah.
And today,
they
of
were
course,
in the 50s and 60s, and there were rules.
Exactly. And it was to present the cops in a good light and to have the dramas. And they always put down the young kids. Even in the 70s, when really we had taken over the culture as far as music and movies had concerned, as far as TV was concerned, it was always like, oh, we got to talk to that hippie in the restaurant and see if we can get information. And the guy, they always had the worst instrumental music playing with the psychedelic guitars.
Or the Waka Waka.
Or the Waka Waka. Yeah. And then they'd go and the guy would always be out of it. Hey, man, I don't know, man. I just mind my own business. Like, they had the worst...
I don't
worst,
know what you're talking
yeah,
about,
yeah, like,
man.
Young people. I don't squeal, man. And they had the worst... image of the young people, which is basically that kind of guy or woman. The girl who was a hippie was always ditzy and stupid. I don't know. I just want to get a hit of acid. So don't bother me, man. And it was just insulting. Actually, it was insulting, to be honest with you. And that's why I think I was very cold to most
detective shows.
And, I'll tell you, we're going to go through some of them. I remember The Rookies, never saw it, didn't like it. It ran from 1972 to 1976. I guess there was these rookies who were cops.
For four years, they were rookies.
And they were rookies, they're cops for 4 years.
Yeah, that's like a Welcome Back, Carter, how they were all.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember watching it, and I just, it had Kay Jackson in it before she was a Charlie's Angel, so, and I like Kay Jackson.
Yeah.
But the show had no... and even Charlie's Angels, which is just fluffy and supposed to be kind of like lighthearted, mm-hmm. I couldn't get into... Other than how beautiful the girls were, it was all just fluff. You knew that it was talking down to you. I couldn't get into that.
Yeah, as far as the stories go, I don't remember any of them.
Yeah, I don't remember any of them. So the show I did like and I did watch was Starsky and Hutch because it was funny. And you know what? They did something. And I just read this. I just read this about a month ago. They did something that actually they didn't do at that time in culture, which was patting a guy on the back or stuff like that that we do nowadays. You know how people give... guys give them fist bumps and stuff like that. And they give them a little hug when they see them at the bar or whatever. They did a lot of that on Starsky and Hutch to show how close they were, but people didn't do that back then. And if you think about it, they didn't on shows at least, and they didn't do it much in public at that time. It was not part of the culture.
No, that was a counterculture.
It was a counterculture thing. And so everybody in the business labeled Starsky and Hutch kind of like the gay cops as a joke because they were so like... Like they were like 30 years ahead of their time or 20 years ahead of their time by kind of like, hey, buddy, and all that. and I hope you're doing okay, and I'm not leaving until you're okay. And that wasn't that. It's strange now. It really is. But back then,
you were expecting to be a little tougher.
You had to be tougher, and you didn't. You didn't hug your, or you didn't even put your hand on his. You know, on his shoulder. You could shake hands
when you were meeting someone.
You could shake hands.
That was it.
But you couldn't say, you know, hello, hey, buddy, how's it going? You know, I, you know, you're like, I don't know what I would do. You always had to be
tough and intimidating.
Yeah.
And there were times when they were not tough and intimidating.
Starsky and Hutch together were actually very close. You know what I mean? Like very close friends and buddies. And that was not looked well upon by all these macho people who, well, the world was like that. My dad was like that. My dad was very, he had a heart of gold, but he was very tough. Like he had, his emotions were very tough.
Oh, yeah.
He never said, I loved you or anything like that.
No, no, that's not a guy's talking about that. Come on.
That was the 70s. And so Starsky and Hutch was actually very groundbreaking in a way that people didn't even know. They actually acted the way people would act 20 years later. I always liked Starsky. It was very funny, but it was always had some cool issues on it too. Of course, loved Barney Miller. That's more, of course, a comedy.
Comedy. Let's keep the comedies out of this.
We'll keep the comedies out of it. Show I never watched, and actually, I really despise Barnaby Jones.
You like Barnaby Jones?
You know, I tried watching 5 or 10 minutes, and it's like, I don't want to see an 80-year-old guy solve crimes.
I remember Barnaby Jones, but I don't remember liking the show.
No,
I don't remember disliking the show. It was just...
I don't think I disliked it. I just think it, just like you said, just turned me off.
But I think that's one of those ones where when they do different acts, they'd have the puzzle pieces coming in. Is that Barnaby Jones?
The puzzle pieces coming in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just never got it. That was, I'm sorry, that was a show for my parents. And again, it was being out of touch with the kids and having all these grown-ups solve crimes. And your grandpa solving a crime, they had no realization that even though it ran for 7 years, that's very impressive, but they had no realization that the kids were the ones watching TV. And it was just like, wow, okay.
Yeah, it was definitely transitioning there because that's
the way it was a transition. It was a transition period. Something a little more hip was Beretta, which I didn't watch too well. I didn't like the police 1 hour shows. For some, even with somebody as cool as Beretta.
No, there are other better things to do with your evenings.
There were. So I didn't watch Beretta, even though I liked Beretta, even though I only watched it once or twice. I remember saying he's pretty cool, like he's not like everybody else on TV. But I didn't like it. McLeod, my parents loved it. Didn't get it. The guy came in, you know, Dennis Weaver came in on like a horse. And what the hell's that about?
That one I thought was a little dry.
It was a little dry. It confused me. Didn't get it.
Why doesn't he just go to the country if he likes horses?
That kind of thing. Cannon, I kind of like because it's a fat cop trying to solve crimes. Yeah. And that alone is a great comedy. It should have been a comedy.
He was running after suspects. Yeah. The only funnier one was Ironsides when he was running after suspects.
Ironside, again, a favorite of my parents. I was very young when Ironside was on, and I just remember one or two episodes, and I just remember that he was a very gruff man because he was in a wheelchair for yeah. You know, it's a good reason to be gruff. But it was like, you guys get this. He had to use his mind. And then he had the people, his underlings, like, go find out why that guy won't talk. And hurry up. I'm in a wheelchair, damn it.
He's running. Get him.
I didn't like Cannon because he's a fat man solving crimes. That's cool. Kojak was cool. Never really watched it.
Kojak, when we just watched that theme sung by Sammy Davis Jr.
Yeah.
Okay. Kojak was cool.
That was cool. Probably the coolest theme song for, other than the SWAT one. Probably SWAT the was coolest great. Theme one. Chips, I hated for some reason. Just hated it. I watched Chips,
but...
It's like a pretty boy show. I don't want to watch a pretty boy show.
Yeah, it was a lot of... it was kind of fluffy.
It was fluffy. I didn't like it. Adam 12, I hated. Adam 12 was on like all the time. Because they had it as a regular show from 1968 to 1975.
I don't consider the uniform cop shows to be detective shows.
Well, I meant cop detective shows. I'm sorry.
Okay, both cop and detective. Okay,
yeah,
okay.
I should have said that. I didn't like it. First of all, it's 30 minutes long. It's bullshit. You got two cops, two clean-cut cops, which are totally out of sync with 1968 to 1975. These guys in short haircuts, very clean-cut, trying to solve crimes or whatever the hell they're doing on their patrol. I really hated the show, and it was always on. It was on until 1975, and then it was on like for 10 years after in syndication. It was always fucking on. I despise the show. It was one of those shows that was very pro, and I'm not anti-police at all, but they were so clean cut. They had no problems. They had no, you know, they just went and did their job all the time. Of course, I'm not anti-police because my brother was a policeman.
They were bland characters.
They were bland characters, and yeah. Streets of San Francisco, actually, I watched a couple times and I liked. I think it's because I liked Carl Malden and I liked Michael Douglas. And Carl Malden just had a very everyday man feeling about him. You know what I mean? Instead of these guys that were all, he was kind of had a like a rumpled suit. And then Michael Douglas was the young guy who was kind of the hip guy who was trying to put some youth and energy into the old system. And I like the streets. I wish I would have watched more episodes. I like the streets of San Francisco. Of course, like every kid, this is how you do a show, The Rockford Files.
The Rockford Files.
One of the best detective shows
greatest
ever.
Greatest theme show of the seven, or theme song of the 70s,
Mike
I think.
Post, great yeah. song. Yeah. Funny, great drama.
You like the characters.
Even more funny. He you like the characters.
It's not like he didn't always win, but he was getting knocked out frequently.
You know, he always got knocked out. He even said, every show, somebody punched me. And it's like, he's like the anti-hero. And they didn't have anti-heroes back then. That's Beretta right. was kind of an anti-hero.
The cops were always kind of warning him to stay away from
exactly.
the stuff.
Exactly. He was trying to solve crimes as a private investigator. But the bad guys didn't like him. The cops didn't like him all that much. And yet he still did his job. He was a tough guy, but he was also kind of clumsy and funny and good in fights, but kind of not good in fights. A classic show. Yeah. I think everybody in our age love the Rockford Files.
I definitely enjoyed that one. That was in syndication. And that was one of the few that I enjoyed.
Yeah, it was. It was actually one of the few cop detective shows that was almost must-see TV. Police Story, I never understood fucking Police Story. I can't believe it aired till 1987. Fuck you, it aired till 1987. Sorry about the language. But I remember Police Story from like 1973 to 1977. And here it says it was on till 1987.
They might have made a mistake there.
I just didn't understand it. And one of the things I didn't understand by Police Story was that they had, it was an anthology series, which meant there was different cast every week.
Yeah, it was about different people. You tune in the next week expecting to see the people you saw last week. They weren't there.
Yeah. Which is great if you're The Twilight Zone, one of the best shows of all time. But Police Story is kind of strange because it was like that kind of time had passed and it was in different stories. It was just policemen. And again, it had the policemen in kind of like, I don't know, that
could,
thing where policemen
could
are untouchable.
Could do no wrong.
Could do no wrong, yeah. I don't know if I like, you know, we'll skip that. Policewoman, the beautiful Angie Dickinson. But I'm telling you, I almost never watch this show, even though it's got the beautiful Angie Dickinson on it, because Angie Dickinson is like my mother. She's that old. So when I was a kid, it was like, yeah,
watching
I know.
Your mom
I know all these 40-year-old guys are going, oh my God, this show's great. I'm like 13, and I'm going like, but she's like, I think she's even older than my mother. So I never got that, and then just, I don't know, it was a show that, again, is it was more hokey than, although very, very ahead of its time to have a woman as the lead of a police show. And I give it that regard.
Yeah, but you didn't see that till Cagney and Lacey.
And if I was 30 or something like that, then I would be much more into the show, if you know what I mean. But we were born to Charlie's Angels and girls that were late 20s instead of like early 40s.
Yeah.
But Angie Dickinson's still around and she's woo-hoo, still woo-hoo, if you know what I mean. Hawaii 5-0, never got it. Too straight-laced. Way too fucking straight-laced. I'm not a big fan of Hawaii.
No, the theme was great, but once you got past the theme, then you had to watch
the Ventures.
Show.
Yeah. Once you got past the theme.
Then you had to watch the show. Yeah.
Very straight-laced, yeah. A show I really liked, only lasted 2 years, but I think every kid in school liked it. Had a great theme song that everybody remembers, SWAT.
SWAT, yeah.
They've tried to remake SWAT as both a TV show now, and before they tried to remake it as a movie. I don't know anything about it. I know the SWAT movie was really bad, from what I understand. But SWAT was pretty cool. Like we talked about before on this show, just a couple weeks ago.
You know that the
we didn't even know what SWAT meant back then.
No, that was kind of new back then when the police actually were starting to divide into specialized jobs.
Exactly. So it was very cool. I mean, I didn't, when all that stuff that they did on that show was being seen for the first time in the public's
eye. That did make it interesting.
And that did make it interesting. I did like that show. I did watch it every week, one of the shows. Mannix was Squaresville. I'm sorry.
Almost don't remember Mannix.
Almost don't. I'm with you. Almost don't remember Mannix. I remember the Buffalo Springfield were on the show once. It was very derogatory. Again, very derogatory against young kids. And any young kid was like a delinquent, smoking dope all the time and worth nothing. Sorry, didn't like it. One of the best shows of all time.
Columbo.
Funny, dramatic, great acting, great directing. I rarely see a bad episode of it. Yeah. I can speak for Rob.
I love the bad guys.
You love the bad guys. Sometimes you wish the bad guys would get away, but then I don't know, something turns you on and you always wish that Columbo got him in the end. It was actually very smart writing. There was even some trick endings once in a while. Some of the best acting I've ever seen is on Columbo. I think it's one of the greatest TV shows ever done in any country. I think Rob will agree with me. Yep. We are huge Columbo nuts.
I'm glad that I didn't get to see it in the 70s. I think it was the 90s when it started to come on syndication on some of the channels that I started to watch it.
We discovered it about the same time because it was on in the 70s. It was on once every 4 weeks because they had that mystery theater thing where they had McMillan and wife, and then the next week they would have Columbo, and then they would have McLeod, and it was like I don't know, it seems kind of hokey. But then when you get older and you see it and you see the great acting and the great writing, fantastic writing and direction, and just with the way some stories went, very off kilter for 70s television. Brilliant show. I can't say enough about it. Me and Rob could talk about this for 3 hours about how we love Columbo, because it's actually much more complicated than people think it is. And it's just a great show. And as we come down, the FBI. I hated the FBI. Again, where it makes the FBI look like they're flawless and these guys have no personal lives. You don't find out anything about them.
Saving the world from
communists.
Saving everyone from themselves. They were Team America World Police.
Team America had no, even at that young age, had just FBI. No time for that kind of shit. It's amazing how young people even have a sense of that kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
You know?
They know when the wolves being pulled over their eyes.
I'm not saying it's a bad show for people who like it. I'm not degrading it. But I'm saying for young people to have a show where people have no emotions except doing their job, and they're doing their job for mankind's sake. It's like, fuck off. And I think that's about it. We talked about Ironside. We can't talk about it every single show. But I think we pretty much covered all of them. And what it comes to is that basically, except for two or three shows, we didn't like them. They were very old guard, and we were moving in a new direction. And I don't think... I know that they were not in the right time. They didn't reflect what was happening in the world.
They were from the old 50s, 60s entertainment, definitely.
And what was the shows that personified young people? Rockford Files, because I don't have to state why, because of the anti-hero. And Starsky and Hutch got two young guys who aren't afraid to show their emotions, and
kind of those are the only two I watch now that I think about
it. Yeah, I agree.
I've seen the others for episodes every now and then, but
didn't those are the only two shots out because we didn't watch Columbo until they came on. We didn't start watching Columbo until the early 90s or whatever when they went on repeats, and then we watched them all the time because it is one of the best shows ever made, not just detective shows, but just one of the best shows ever made. And so yeah, we like two out of like 40 shows. we weren't big, and we have to explain it has to do mainly with, because they have very realistic shows now, and they have had since probably the mid 80s, they've had very realistic shows for the last 40 years now. Realism in detective shows and cop shows are there at a premium. Back then, it was all bullshit. It was all propaganda, and it was mainly toting the line of the police are good and they don't have any other lives other than their job and they don't have any problems. And when you see it nowadays, you go, "Oh my God, what bullshit!" But I'm telling you, when I was growing up, I'm a young, even 8-year-old saying, "That's bullshit." I don't have time for that kind of crap. I hated Adam 12.
You know, if comedies were included, I did watch Barney Miller. That one was good.
Yeah, everybody, every kid watched Barney Miller. We loved it. If it was just for the theme song alone, that was good. But the show was hilarious almost every week.
Good cast.
Even that showed more as a comedy about police work than a lot of these propaganda shows like FBI. God.
Yeah, and it was just, I don't see this propaganda. I just see it as the way they had to do things. The war movies, you had to win. You couldn't have.
You're right. I don't. Endings. You're actually right. I don't mean propaganda as they try to enforce that. It's just the only way they knew.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's just the
way. They refuse to change with the times.
Done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have our album of this week, which is Little Feet, Dixie Chicken, released in 1973. And Little Feet, one of the most critically hailed bands in the world, but a band, we have a lot of bands like this that don't sell a lot of records and for some reason are not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm not going to get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but the bands that aren't in there compared to the bands that are in there, holy fuck, like it's just unbelievable. There's a
talent differential there.
One of the things when I started listening to music in the late 70s was the amount of times a musician would say his favorite band was Little Feet. I remember when Peter Frampton was big and he released the I'm In You album. His band that he always would rave about in interviews was Little Feet. That was his favorite band. Jimmy Page stated that Little Feet was his favorite American band in a 1975 Rolling Stone interview. I heard this many times when I was a kid, and I was going, I wonder what this band sounds like.
Yeah, I always wondered, because I heard about them.
They weren't played on the radio at all. You know, a lot of that has to do with we weren't listening to the radio when they were popular. They broke up in 1978 after Little George, unfortunately, the genius that he is, died of a. I'm going to look that up because some people say it was a heart attack. Some people say it was a drug overdose. But he played a concert on his solo tour, and unfortunately, he died in way too young. He was such an immense talent. And Little Feet I still can't believe they got back together. They got back together in 1987 without Lowell George, which to me is like getting the Beatles together without John Lennon and going on tour and recording albums. But they did, and people like them. They did that sort of music that they did, but without Lowell George. Come on. A very interesting story about Little Feet in that as they were starting out, Lowell George, he was a member of Frank Zappa's Mothers of Invention in the late 60s. And Bill Payne, he met Bill Payne. he actually tried out for the Mothers, but had not joined. He auditioned for the Mothers, but had not joined. Whether he was accepted or he didn't want to do it, I don't know how you don't want to do it if you auditioned for it. Anyways, that's how Lowell George met Bill Payne, the keyboardist of Lafitte. And they also, in the original Little Feet, was the Mothers' bassist, Roy Estrada, and drummer Richie Haywood from George's previous band, The Factory. Now, there's a story about George being in the Mothers and why he was let go. And there are like three or four stories. And one of the stories has it that George showed, it all had to do with his song Willin', which is one of the, should have been in my top 30 songs of all time, but I could only have so many songs, was Lowell George's song Willin', which he showed to Zappa, and that Zappa fired him from the Mothers of Invention after hearing the song because he felt that George was too talented to merely be a member of his band and told him he ought to go away and form his own band. That's probably the least plausible of the stories. I actually believed that for quite a while, but as I read the other stories, I find they're much more plausible, which is the second version has Zappa firing him. Now, this is actually the least plausible. The story about him firing him so because the song was too good and he should be on his own is the second most least plausible. This is the most least plausible, is that Zappa fired him for playing a 15, for Lowell George playing a 15-minute guitar solo with his amplifier off, which I just think is one of those legends that prop up that aren't true. The third version is the one that I totally believe, and that is said that Zappa fired him because Willin' contained drug references. Actually, it's very heavily a drug song, and one of the lines is weed, whites, and wine. God, I love that song. And George often introduced the song as the reason he was asked to leave the band. And on October 18th, 1975, in Rochester, New York, while introducing the song to his audience, he commented that he was asked to leave the band by Zappa for writing a song about dope. I actually believe that 100%.
I do too, because Zappa was not a drug taker.
He was not a drug taker, and I don't think he wanted to express those type of things if you don't believe in them.
Yeah. He wasn't a big anti-drug, this has to stop. He was just, this is not...
He just didn't want to advocate it.
Yeah, it's not part of my world at all. Yeah. It's not something I'm into.
And knowing that Zappa is not exactly the most... genial of leaders. He's not a bad guy, but he's not the most genial. If he finds something,
put a band together, you want that band to be the way you want it.
Yeah, so. and if he found somebody that even in a I hope nobody heard that. That was my phone. But I have to have my phone on because it's got my timer. It's my timer.
I always shut mine off at the beginning because I hate it.
Yeah, just saying that he could find somebody else. I think he knew how talented Lowell George was, but Zappa has always been known to alienate almost every member of his band at some point. The stories are full of great for 3 years and then, you know, French Frank. He's a very hard taskmaster, and sometimes if you don't do your 6 hours worth of prep each day, then you'll hear about it. And some people would get tired of it after a while. And some people have nothing but great things to say about working with Frank. Depends on who you were. Depends on your temperament also around Frank. But I have no qualms about this. I know that he was fired for writing a song about dope. Anyways, Little Feet released two albums with that lineup. Self-titled album in 1970 and a 1971 Sail and Shoes, which especially the first album were much different than the albums that starting with Dixie Chicken that they would play. Dixie Chicken, much more of a funkified loose jam kind of R&B funk record, whereas Little Feet, which I think is a classic album, just an absolute classic album, was more of a roots rock rock and roll record, as was Sailing Shoes, and the band kind of changed with their third record a little bit, and they got a couple of new members in for Dixie Chicken. They got Paul Bure on second guitar, which gave a little bit of leeway for Lowell George to play more slide guitar, and with having a second guitarist, he added a lot more funk to the sound of Little Feat. And they also got a new bass player in Kenny Gradney, who stayed with them until the end, and who replaced Roy Estrada, who moved on to the Captain Beefheart's Magic Band. And yeah, so that brings and the album is very New Orleans R&B funk, I guess you would call it. Very Crescent City, as they say. Also Sam Clayton on percussion, I should mention, also started on this album. I just wanted to catch Rob opening up his water, which is always fun to do. I like this album a lot. I like Little Feat. I'm not a big fan. I have to admit, I'm not a big fan of R&B funk and not R&B funk, New Orleans R&B funk. But Little Feat sounded. Would you shut up? Put that away. Makes me laugh. I really like this record. I've always liked Little Feat, their musicianship. Lowell George is an amazing songwriter. Has been throughout his whole time until he unfortunately passed away. Which we will get to on another show. We will do Lowell George's one and only solo album just before he passed away. And we'll talk about more of that. And this is when Lowell George was in charge. And the story about Little Feat in a little time capsule here is that Lowell George pretty much ran the show until he kind of started, gradually from album to album. On this one, he like totally has control of this album. This is his album. Next album, people started writing more, and then the next album after that, people said, and all of a sudden, they were playing music that he didn't like, which was a lot more jazzier, a lot more fusion jazz, which didn't appeal to him at all. And if you're playing music that don't appeal, it's not going to sound good. Not that it was terrible, but it wasn't. It was going away from Lowell George's original vision. So he left. He left at the end of their Time Loves a Hero album and in 77, 78. And he broke up Little Feat. But then he made his solo album, Thanks, I'll Eat It Here, which we will talk about on another show. And then he told people in and out of the press that he was going to get Little Feat together, but he was going to eliminate a couple of members that were not, that were bringing in these jazz fusion type of songs and getting back to the roots of Little Feat. Unfortunately, that never happened because he passed away. Would have been interesting to have Little Feat again with Lowell George at the helm, 100% in the helm, because that's really where they were at their best, as on this album. It's an album hard to talk to. A lot of the songs have the same type of feel. I just love the songwriting. Roll 'em Easy, such a cool song. Of course, Dixie Chicken. That's where the Dixie Chicks got their name, who are now called the Chicks.
The Chicks.
Yeah. Will you be my Dixie Chicken? If you'll be my Dixie Chicken, I'll be your Tennessee Lamb.
Did they take the Dixie Chicken out of there for political reason, the Dixie Chicks?
Yeah, because there was too much pressure on them to have Dixie in there, so they had to take that out of there. And
we'll have a fascist government shortly.
Fat Man in the Bathtub, such a great song. I really wish I had more to say about it, but it's just a really strong album. It doesn't, other than Dixie Chicken, which is one of Little Feat's best known songs, which really stands out to me, and Fat Man in the Bathtub. It's just a really strong album full of songs. And I don't think Rob feels that way for some reason. I'm going to let you talk in a minute. But I can tell by Rob's expressions on his face when I say things that he doesn't quite agree with me.
I'm surprised by the statements this man across the table is making. Was he listening to the same album as me?
But I must admit, I'm like I said, except for Little Feet, I'm not a big fan. If it wasn't for Lil George's songwritings, I'm not a big fan of the New Orleans R&B funk type of thing. I think their first album is dynamite. I think it just blows me out of the water. But that was a whole different type of music, and I think it's just a very strong record that I liked listening to every time. But this type of music will never blow me away, because it's that type of music that doesn't do a lot of blowing me away type of stuff. But it's solid. And it's solid as a rock because of Lil George. And that's all I can basically say about this record. Now. I'm interested to hear the point counterpoint of Mr. Rob.
I did not enjoy listening to this album every time, except for the last time. And there's a reason for that. But I did not enjoy it. When I would stop and listen, I really enjoyed the playing. It was imaginative, it was tasteful, it was really well recorded. But the songwriting itself did not grab me at all. I found my... there were no songs on it that I looked forward to listening to, that I made any mental notes to remember, other than Kiss It Off, because of Milquetoast Hitler, of course.
But, of course.
For the most part, it came and it went, and I was asking myself, would I be listening to this if it weren't for the show? I mean, I've never heard Little Feet on the radio ever. I've never heard, but I've heard a lot about them, and all the stuff I've heard about them is incredible musicians. And I found nothing to dissuade me from that opinion on this album. They are really good musicians.
I actually agree with you. This album, you know what this album reminds me of? And it really has more to do. It doesn't have anything to do with the musicianship, which we both agree is outstanding. We kind of have a difference on the songwriting. But what we're saying, I think, is what we're saying about this album, is that we know there's some greatness there. But it might be for other people.
It did leave me asking, why am I not enjoying this?
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me distinctly of when we reviewed Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon and Garfunkel, which we both agreed was as perfect as can be, but we were... Yeah. Very unmoved by it. I gave it 5 stars because there was nothing wrong with it, but it was not an album that I desired to play much after we had finished. And I knew I could have told you that right when we reviewed it. I could have said, you know what? I don't know how many times I'm going to play this after this week. And I have a little bit of a better feeling about Little Feet. They're a little bit more in my wheelhouse. But it's still the same kind of thing, is that, oh, I see the greatness there, but I don't get the emotion like I do when I hear like a Roxy Music, where I go nuts on the show and I talk about all the amazing things that I hear and I just go crazy, you know?
Yeah.
I can give it the same. I'm going to give this. No, I'm not going to give it the same stars as Roxy Music, because I gave it 5 stars. But I'm giving this 4.5 stars, but I'm giving it 4.5 stars for the same reason I gave Bridge Over Troubled Water 5 out of 5, is because just because I don't flip over it doesn't mean it isn't a great album. But I think I should let people know that if you're not into New Orleans kind of R&B funk, it might not be to your taste, no matter how great it is. And I do think the songwriting is great. The singing's great. Lowell George's slide guitar playing is marvelous. All that combined doesn't send me over the moon. And just yes. like you, I can't, other than saying that, I can't really explain why. It all has to do with emotion. It really does. Either you're really drawn into it or you're not. And you see or you hear the brilliance, just like Bridge Over Troubled Water. Me and Rob strangely had exactly the same feeling as that. Wow, there's greatness on every single track. So what?
Yeah. It somehow was not a cohesive album. I mean, it was, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
And this one is a cohesive album, but...
There's something holding us back.
I do not understand why it is this is not connecting with me. I think because there's it's got all the parts.
In us that prevents us from really going over the moon about this, that some other people who might like the music, the type of music that... I'm kind of tongue-tied on this. I know there's greatness here. And I'm as tongue-tied as I was when we did Simon and Garfunkel. I really am. I feel exactly the same way. I can't give this less than 4.5 because everything is great on here. But emotionally, it doesn't do much for me. And if that can be understood from, this is pretty much both our opinions. If people can understand that, I hope so, because it kind of sounds confusing when we say it, but there's something sometimes, and it doesn't happen often. I think it's only happened with these two albums.
Spent a week trying to pin down what quality it was, and I still can't.
I can't. You know, it's only happened with these two albums, and we've reviewed 160 albums on this show.
I remember the Smokey Robinson. We knew that was a good
album. That was another one.
But we didn't like it.
But we didn't like because it just was laid back, and it wasn't our type of R&B. Again, it wasn't our type of R&B. I love 70s soul. R&B is a little bit of a thing I'm not a big fan of. I can't be a fan of everything. Right. I can like everything, which I do. I honestly do like everything, but I can't go over the moon over everything. And I realize how good this is. I can hear how good, I can hear how excellent this is, but that doesn't mean it hits me on an emotional level. So I'm rating this on, I know how good it is, but that's what I'm rating it on, because I can't rate it on how I feel about it, because there's some sort of wall there.
What's missing?
I know, and it bugs me too. It bugged me, seriously, a lot more than people think when we reviewed Bridge Over Troubled Water, why this is one of the classic, of all classic albums, and we agreed with that, but it didn't do anything emotionally for us. We didn't. We enjoyed it. It was like, oh, that's nice. Yeah, but we didn't really want to hear it again after.
I certainly love the songs, but I kind of viewed it as more like I would view a greatest hits album or something like that.
I mean, we're both in agreement on these two albums. And I don't think we're going to figure out why we have this wall against the sum total of it. I don't know. I love the song Dixie Chicken, but and I love Fat Man in the Bathtub. But as a whole, and I have listened to every Little Feat album up until Lowell. I won't listen to the albums after Lowell George died when they reunited. But not that I'm prejudiced or anything, because I did try and listen to one.
Time management.
I put on a few songs. This was not my cup of tea without Lowell George. But I have listened to every Little Feat album. And the early ones, which were less funky and R&B, I really loved. I just think they're amazing. As it gets on, I like every Little Feat album, but every album kind of from this point on, if I didn't listen to them. And again, it sounds harsh, but I don't mean it to be harsh, because I think they're one of the best musicianship type of bands out there that have ever been.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that I'm attracted to listening to their music all the time, or even once in a while. I will listen to Little Feat once in a while. I do. But I still have that same feeling as, oh, that was nice. I wonder what I'm going to listen to tomorrow. Whereas I listen to something that really gets me, like anything by Roxy Music or anything by The Stones or something, and I go, fuck, man, that's why I listen to rock and roll. And I could get on a pulp to just preach for an hour. I mean, and I could feel the blood running through me and going, oh my God, this is like life. I'm never going to say that about this.
No, I did. I will report one strange thing. Is that, you know, sometimes different albums have different times or moods when they ought to be listened to. And the one time I started getting into this was when I was having a few drinks.
Oh, really?
So
I actually find this, that's an interesting point, because this is one of the albums I find that you can put on. You may like it a bit more when you're having a few drinks,
yeah,
but it's actually one of the few albums, because I, there's like, we did John Cale last week, and that's kind of like a night album, you know,
yeah,
very much so. This, I feel you could listen to this any time of day. It has that, and R&B funk is kind of like that, you know. It's kind of like you can, it's got that beat to it and that funkiness to it that you can listen to it at almost any time of day, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I got nothing against having it on in the background. Like, there's nothing here that I find anything offensive to my ears. It all sounds good.
I guess what we're saying to end this, what's your rating, first of all, before I end it here?
I honestly give it a 3.5.
Okay.
And that's the musicianship carries it there. It's that point, because it literally does not move me.
Yeah. It's so funny how this album, we got the same pretty much response. It just didn't move us. And we we know the greatness. Hey, we've been around this biz a long time. We know what's good. We know what's bad. As far as musicianship
to compare it to. Yeah.
Yes. And I'm telling you, we know that it's great, but it doesn't move us like it will move some people. Or a lot of people. And we're just being honest. And we're never go on this show and say we love an album when we don't. Or it moves us when it doesn't. And you have to understand, we're not knocking this album.
No, I have immense respect for everything done on this album. I just know that for some reason,
this is our fault. This is not the fault. We have stated the positives of the record, and because it doesn't move us emotionally like it does other people, that's not the fault of Lowell George or the guys in the band. That's just our taste.
You know, because other people are moved by it, something's there. But
we don't get it.
I'm not hearing it.
Hey, I listen to Neil Young, and there are a lot of people that I know, and I go gaga over him. And some people say, I can't even have that music in the same room as me. And I can't understand it, but that's the way it is. Everybody has this. Everybody has tastes that are different. And you know what? That's what makes this show interesting.
Yep.
But the good thing is that, and I hate to pat ourselves on the back, we're smart enough to know that what is good about this album. We're not just slamming the album. It's like, oh, it doesn't move us emotionally, so it's shit.
So it's crap.
It's crap, exactly. We're not like a bunch of 18-year-olds. We've been around the bend. We know good musicianship. We know good producing and engineering. We know good songwriting. We know good singing. This album has it all in spades, and yet it doesn't move us. That's what we're saying. And that's actually a plus for the album, because we're actually saying this doesn't move us emotionally, and yet we're giving it strong ratings.
I know there's something there, and I do not have the ability to perceive that thing. And it's freaky. It's odd.
It is freaky, and we've rarely come across it, but when we do, it's trust me, it's aggravating. It's more aggravating for us than it is for you to hear our review of it.
You got immense respect for the people making the music, but
next week I'm going to tell you we got a really
doozy
of an
album.
We got a doozy of an album that I'm really interested to see how Rob likes it. It's released, of course, in 1973. It will be the last of our albums. Really excited to see how Rob likes it.
It's a doozy album. I like it.
Yeah, but that's our show for today, people, because it's starting to get cold in the room. And we will be, what was this? Oh, yeah, they're upset. Yeah, that's right. There's somebody coming here in 15 minutes, you know that, to make sure nobody broke into the shack.
Yep. So we'd better be out of here.
So we have to vamoose before they get here, or else we'll be shot with some buckshot right in the bum.
I heard they use rock salt, but...
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
They'd go to the doctor with, I got some rock salt on my bum.
Yeah, something that the shotgun did. We were horsing around.
So that's our show. Next week will be interesting. It's supposed to be really cold next week when we tape. So
yeah, maybe shutting it down once or twice just to heat the place up.
We actually have talked about that we actually might have to do the show in halves. You wouldn't notice it because we'd edit it together. But we actually might have to do a half an hour, shut it down, heat up the place, and then do the second half.
That's the problem with being in a shack. It just doesn't hold its heat the way...
And it's not even our shack. We break in. So take care, everybody, and stay safe. I just...